It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham. We'll talk about Senate overturning that FCC rule protecting your privacy online. It's about to happen. We'll tell you what you can do to fight it. New rules in the EU about privacy. Maybe they've gone too far. And how they caught Kurt Eichenwald's Twitter harasser. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 397, recorded Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. Mama Needs a Drink. This Week in Google is brought to you by Segment, the leading unified customer data platform. Segment collects data across your websites, mobile apps, and cloud platforms, and delivers it to over 170 third-party tools and apps. Get 3 months free on the Segment team plan when you sign up at segment.com/twit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code twig. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Or what did somebody say? It's time to branch out with Twig. That's Jeff Jarvis. He's back from his travels. Hi, Jeff Jarvis. Good to see you.
Thank you as ever.
Professor of journalism at the City University of New York, author of many a great book, blogger at buzzmachine.com. Always a welcome presence here. We missed you last week, but thanks to Danny Sullivan for filling
in. Thank you, Danny.
Stacey's a fan. Stacey Higginbotham's also here. Stacey on IoT, iotpodcast.com. Because apparently
she's to your right.
Or left, depending.
To our left.
She's on the left of the screen to my right. It is confusing. She was saying how much she liked Danny because he, too, had left-right issues. Confusion.
That's true. So, yeah. Am I looking
at the stage left, stage right.
Yes, you were. Right. Perfect.
Okay.
Well done.
That was good. I figured it
out. Good.
It's easier for me.
Helps.
Yeah. I'm the think of me as the shelf. Put a dot on the shelf, and then you can address me. That's when I was a virtual reality character. That's how Soledad O'Brien would seem. I would just be a piece of tape on the wall, and she would have a conversation with a piece of tape on the wall, and then they would superimpose me later on MSNBC's The Site. Yeah,
your time as a hologram.
My days as a dot on the wall, a piece of painter's tape. That was me. Remember that piece of painter's tape? So, I got oddly enough, Facebook message from Kevin Marks looking for a good, large Android phone. And I gave him the same recommendation I'm giving everybody, really, who's looking for Android these days, is stick with Pixel. Google's Pixel is a really good Android phone. It's uninspiring at first, not colorful.
But it's elegant. And I busted mine in London.
But how did you get a new one?
So I got the experience. Not a new one. It's fixed. There's a support button on the about the phone. I went there, opened up the chat. What do I do? They have a deal across the country with you break, I fix.
And me, Tarzan, you within chain.
Isn't that the great name?
You break.
So
I
within fix. Within 10 miles of my house, there were two or three of them. I made an appointment. I was still in London. I made an appointment. They called me in London just to make sure, how's the phone? We got it in stock. Yes, come on in. I land. I go immediately there because, after all, this is more important than my family or anything. I don't have my phone. And so I drop it off. 2 hours later, picked up, new screen, new LCD. Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's great. And you have the XL.
I have the XL. I love the phone.
So
the one minor little rant I want to go on is it does amaze me that this product category remains a product category where you have to buy a case. I mean, do you buy a car condom?
Yeah.
You buy
You might buy a
shed
bra
for your house.
Yeah.
Right. And I just hate, I don't like cases. You buy the phone. It feels nice. You want to buy the phone, but oops.
I don't use a case on any of my phones.
Drop. Craig Newmark saw me have the phone without a case and he scolded me. So I got the case, but they also sold me.
He should be grateful.
For $49. Just a cover, but it's a special cover. And if I ever break the screen again, it'll only cost me $9 to get it repaired.
Oh, well, I don't see it. What is it?
It's a
shield.
But it's a good one.
It's a
thick one.
It's glass.
It has no fingerprints.
There's glass. They have now glass screen covers.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. And they, the theory being the glass, they'll break before the phone breaks.
So if you drop it, because I always drop mine on the edge.
Right. I get the
does
corner,
that,
yeah. a corner ding.
Does it protect it if you drop it on the edge? Can you drop your phone and see for me, Jeff, please?
Thanks. Very, very, very good, Stacey. Very good.
Always land on the corner.
Days are coming back.
So the reason
did
I bring
the audience
this,
missed that? Did they miss what Stacey used to do? Did they miss this moment?
They did, because before the show began. We learned
the audience
Stacey's
previous life.
We learned that Stacey at the end of her wedding, the recessional, as she and her new husband walked out the door, they played "I've Been Working on the Railroad." And then
To be fair.
No, I don't want to be fair.
It was the University of Texas theme song, "The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You." Which happens to be the same song.
Exactly the same.
Exactly like.
And if you're not singing lyrics, indistinguishable. It is the same song. And we learned that Stacey, in college for beer money, taught kickboxing at 5:45 a.m. Most importantly, so,
yes, so early.
You see,
Stacey.
You've been with us for about a year. It takes about a year before we really get all the corners filled in, as you know, to the who you are. We're getting there now.
Oh, I'm like, wow! If this defines me, I'm in trouble.
Well, you know, it all. Right, so part I interrupted of the puzzle. You, so the reason I brought this up is that as the rumors are flying about new Pixel phones from Google, we don't know when. We know the code names. Last year was marlin and sailfish. This year, more fish, musky and walleye. Walleye was mentioned in the Android open source project, so that sounds like their hardware is coming along. According to Droid Life, Muskie is a 5.5-inch, walleye is the smaller 5-inch. Then we're now seeing a rumor that there is even a third phone called Taimen.
Is that a fish?
It must be. I don't know. Chat room, is Taimen a fish?
Siberian Taimen, Siberian salmon is a species of fish in the salmon family.
Oh, so maybe this is the, you know what, that would lend me to think this might be the Chinese version of the Pixel phone. That's the new thing, right? Microsoft just made a Chinese version of Windows 10 to appease regulators there. I wouldn't be surprised to see a Chinese version of that phone.
Oh, wait. Now it's also the Eurasian giant trout. Found in Russia, Mongolia, and China.
Russian version, the Russian and Chinese version.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what would be, is a Taimen a big fish?
It is. It's a large, it's good for dry fly fishing, apparently.
So remember the Nexus 6, which is codenamed Shamu, the killer whale. So that was a big one. And I guess if Taimen is a big fish, maybe this is an even bigger 6-inch. Would you get I'm starting to think that the perfect size for a laptop is 13 inches and the perfect size for a phone is 5.7 inches.
Smaller, 5-inch phone. Laptop, 13-inch.
Okay, so you agree with me on the laptop, but you want a smaller
phone. My hands
are
smaller.
You're a woman. Maybe you have a little bit smaller hand. I don't have huge hands. Jeff, you like a big phone, you said.
Because I'm a manly man.
But nobody wants...
I don't have a Trump hand.
But you had the Nexus 6. Wasn't that just a little too big?
It was too big. It was a little bit too... In fact, it's my 5 phone. It's my international phone, so I still use it. Not only that, a little bit too big, and also because the back is
curved
like this.
Yeah.
It you can't use it on a dinner table.
It's rocky.
Yeah, when I'm eating alone in the restaurant.
I use it like a tablet now. I have it as kind of a tablet phone that I use for timers and stuff like that.
I will argue that the perfect tablet size
is 7
inches.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
I agree.
Yeah.
Are there cases that you can stick on your phones, coming back to the phone case, but also the dinner table thing, that have like a little picture stand that you can pop out?
Yes.
So you...
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Craig Newmark's case is just that. I'll ask him right now.
I suddenly was like, oh my God, that's the thing I need that I didn't know I needed until right this moment.
Yeah, they have stands. And some have stands only in landscape mode. Some have stands landscape or portrait. But I think landscape's normally what you'd want because you're looking at a movie or a TV show on a tray table. That's kind of the point, right?
Oh,
or you're
I was
eating
just thinking,
your breakfast. You're spooning up your Cheerios and
at the dinner table.
At the dinner table. Oh man,
not the dinner table.
The
Sorry.
Breakfast table.
It's where. Yes, it's the same.
Well,
table.
When I say dinner table, I mean I'm out alone. I'm sad in a restaurant far from home.
God, there's nothing worse. Right?
I have to keep company.
Table for one, Mr. Jarvis. Again.
I just ate lunch today by myself, and I love sitting by myself
little,
and eating.
That's because they have a little one. And any moments to yourself are precious when your kids are little. Yes.
I like people watching.
It's fun.
And eating.
So you have your phone. Okay, I'm just kidding. Again, we're filling in the picture of who Stacey Higginbotham is. Seeing you at
she's
the
a loner.
That day cafe.
She's dangerous. She's a registered weapon.
Yep.
She's a loner. You don't mess with Stacey.
She's munching on a bear
no
claw.
No surprise her in the restaurant.
With her phone on a kickstand looking at people.
But it's in portrait. It's not in landscape mode.
In portrait.
Well, because I'm usually reading
or you're reading articles.
Emailing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not watching things. Yeah. Bad me.
So the thing is, now I know I'm going to have to get a larger phone for one reason. Because it's all I'll be able to carry on a plane with me.
This is shocking.
This has me upset.
Yes.
This has me so upset.
So there's two theories as to this. New rule. Yes. The rule is that certain Middle Eastern airlines in certain cities will be forbidden, passengers will be forbidden from carrying larger electronics. The phone will be the biggest electronic, the only electronic you can carry on board. The rest will have to be in checked
baggage.
Even
a camera you can't take.
Even a camera. It says, they said ostensibly for security reasons. I think they're trying to make you think that there's new information. And by the way, there was a rumor that Virgin Atlantic was going to consider doing this. Have they announced?
Well,
the British authorities were thinking of doing it. Okay. But that's more in solidarity.
There's kind of three theories, aren't there?
Well, I know two. So the one is the one that's on the face of it, which is, there must be some discovery about how people could make bombs. There's a guy apparently teaching terrorists how to make plastic bombs that are undetectable. They're afraid those could be posing as a tablet, a Kindle, or a laptop. That's the obvious theory. What's the other theories two and three?
That it's a Muslim ban, a harassment ban on Muslims, or that it's government subsidized national carriers.
That's what I believe.
Harass them.
So it affects primarily Emirates, Etihad. The three big Middle Eastern carriers. And the theory that I read, which I thought was very interesting, is that this is a protectionist move by the U.S. government because the most lucrative passengers, the business and first class passengers on those airlines, will switch to American carriers for which there is no such ban, so they can use their laptops. And that this will hit hard these Middle Eastern carriers to the benefit of United American.
And mind you, you're going to come through the same airport security in those distant places.
That's my point is, okay, you could ban it, universally. If that's a problem, you have to ban it everywhere. They're saying, well, we don't
trust. Plus, there are other cities that are far worse. Caracas Airport, by all accounts, has no security at all. So why can you bring on a laptop on there and not in Doha?
The rules take effect on Tuesday. The UK has said it will follow yesterday, Tuesday. The UK said it would follow suit with its, but I haven't heard yet that they've done that. Apparently, from the DHS guidance that a 2016 airliner was attacked, perhaps by a laptop bomb. Somebody pointed out, well, the laptop's in my carry-on. There's nothing to prevent me from detonating it remotely via my cell phone, A.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they used to make you turn these things on to verify that they weren't bombs, but they were, in fact, working electronics. They haven't done that lately.
That's such a pain. Can you imagine them starting that again?
Yeah, that would...
At least I carry instant-on things. My Chromebook is instant-on. you poor schmucks with a back, it'd take forever.
Delta, United, and American have long resented the fact that Emirates and Etihad are government subsidized, and have complained along, and Qatar Airways as well, have complained a long time that they have a disadvantage against these airlines because they benefit unfairly from government subsidies. So it's not, in fact, in February, the CEOs of United, American, and Delta sent Secretary of State Tillerson a letter complaining about the massive subsidization of three state-owned Gulf carriers and the significant harm this subsidized competition is causing to U.S. airlines and U.S. jobs, end quote. In a meeting with the executives shortly thereafter, Trump promised phenomenal tax relief, broad deregulation, and other forms of support to the industry. Is this one of those other forms of support? They can't paint it that way because that would, in fact, be a violation of global trade rules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But what's sad is I think it is going to absolutely have that effect. If I were traveling on any one of those airlines to the Middle East, and by the way, you may not be going to Dubai, but it's a very common stopover on the way to Asia, for instance.
It is.
Which gets their hubs and spokes.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to seriously consider thinking about Delta, American, or United. So it's going to have that effect, whether it was intentional or not.
So now add to that your computer and your phone and all that being subject to you when you come back across. You saw the marijuana Colorado story, right?
No, what's that?
So a woman who had a boy, Mexican, who had a boyfriend in California, came back and forth a couple of times. One time when they were in Colorado, hey, they did what you do in Colorado now. And they pulled her phone coming in, and she didn't have any lock on it. They go through all her social. They go through all her photos. She has pictures of a few bongs and things from the grass store, and question her about it, and they kick her back out, and she's indefinitely banned from the United States of America.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
So, right, so I'm trying to think about how do you go completely antiseptic?
We've talked about it on some of the other shows. I don't know if I recommend this, but one thing would be to make sure your phone is backed up, and then as you're about to arrive in the United States, to wipe it.
Yeah.
But then, isn't that a red flag when they say, can you unlock your phone? And you do, and it says, what language would you like to use?
Yeah.
So maybe wipe it and then set it up in a kind of basic fashion. I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, even if you have wiped it, that's fine. I mean, they can't. It's done. It's a fait accompli. So it doesn't matter.
If you're an American citizen, if you're not an American citizen, you may not get in.
True.
Well, and if you are an American citizen, you could be detained for hours in airport jail, which is not fun either.
Because you don't have the rights. You do not have rights there. So here's the question. So they can't make, they can make you use your finger. They can't make you, unless under certain duress, put your password in unless they have some reason to. I wonder if there's some kind of application that encrypts your phone, locks it even from you until it's off the
air. I like that. It's like a geographic lock.
In this airport.
You can't open it until you're home. Oh, it's like somebody needs to write that right now. That's
You'd want to be able to use your phone in the actual airport. So it'd have to be some sort of two-factor. So you could get around it.
Some phones, like the Samsung phone, they have a business and a home use, and there's a locked folder on a Samsung phone. It was Samsung, wasn't it? This had a locked folder on the phone that you could put stuff in that had a separate and additional password. And it wasn't immediately obvious it was there. You could try that. You could unlock the phone. The real problem is what often happens with border control. Apparently, I haven't been through the border since this started, but is that they get you to unlock it and then they take it. And the presumption being they bring it to another room where they – now, could be two things they're doing. They're probably copying the contents of the phone for later analysis. That's bad enough. But once somebody has your phone and it's out of your possession and it's unlocked, you have no idea if they've put surveillance software on it. They could also put malicious software on there.
Mm-hmm.
No way you would know.
And you wouldn't know. So I think the best thing to do, if you can, I mean, look, I'm not going on a 12-hour flight without some sort of entertainment.
No, no.
So
I want to watch The Americans, man.
Yeah. So I think the best thing to do is take it with you normally and just wipe it before you get off. You could still make phone calls with it and use it, but it just won't have any data on it. And then if they do take it, then you have to throw it away.
In fact, throw it away.
A lot of security experts say if somebody takes your phone, if law enforcement takes your phone, just you're done. Don't take it back. You don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
So somebody said on Twitter, go ahead.
I think it's just a real boon for the SkyMall catalog.
There you go. I was going to say I'm going to buy a burner phone.
Yeah, burner phone's another way to go. Yep.
And since I keep 90% of what I care about in the cloud anyway, I can log in, help me find the flaws in my reasoning here. I log in, and then when I'm done, I log out, and then...
You just hope it's not cached.
Right.
Well, it's Chromebook. Ladies and gentlemen, you have a Chromebook, right. and you're using incognito mode, and there's no
so make sure trace. It's a cheap burner phone, because if they do take it, you don't want it back, right?
Right. The point is that phone is done.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is just, why do we have to worry about this? It's not apparent to me at all, maybe I'm completely wrong, that this is in any way improving our security.
No.
If this improved our security, then you can make the argument we need to do this. We need to, you know, protect our nation, improve the security. That's fine. But that's, to me, this does not seem apparent that that's what this is doing.
No, but although. I was going to say, if they discover a new attack, they often don't talk about it, obviously, so they don't tip people off that they know what's happening. Yeah. So do I really believe that this is a security-related threat? It's really hard.
We don't know.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem, Stacey. There's no credibility left.
That's the real problem, right? In fact, it's terrible because you automatically impute malicious, you know, motivations. You impute their motivations because...
Yeah, it could be real.
It could be real, and we wouldn't know.
So yes, somebody named Star Simpson in Twitter suggested that that airlines should be handing out Chromebooks the way they used to hand out headphones.
Remember that for a while, Google, to promote the Chromebook, was doing that? They had little Chromebook booths at the SFO and Terminal 2.
Oh, that's right.
And
I forgot.
Could take it and bring it on the plane, and then there would be a booth at the other end where you'd give it. Opportunity.
Yeah, you can't stream the video maybe on the plane, but you can download the video while you're in the lounge, and then you have things to watch on the plane, and then you hand back in the Chromebook as nothing in your stuff.
This is the ultimate first world problem, though. We are afraid of going an international 12-hour flight. We are going to arrive in a different nation
ruining
in 12
the
hours because we will have to sit with our own thoughts for that time.
No, worse, you'll have to talk to the person next to you.
Or read the SkyMall catalog. All three sound like bits of hell.
Ugh, they really do.
And of course, my sister.
Wait a minute. Talk to the person next to you. You're like one of those people.
No, I hate when people talk to me.
Me too.
I do too.
I put in headphones and I cough and I hawk up phlegm. Anything.
Oh, charming.
Well, you don't want to be charming. You want to be the opposite.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Right, so we're all misanthropes.
Yep.
So does this affect, I did want to know, just in case, most people probably want to work, why this is a big issue, working and streaming. But what about like your Kindle? Can I bring my Kindle?
No, Kindle's included as one of the banned devices.
No, too big.
Which is absurd.
That is.
I'm sorry, that's absurd. There's even less electronics in that than a phone.
Can you imagine having the argument with the airport person? No, this is a Nook, not a Kindle.
Yeah, no, reading, anything bigger than a phone, reading devices, tablets,
what about a big phone?
And I bet you even some big phones. Oh, this is
what
just,
would I do with my child?
Yeah. Oh, what is she going to do? She's going to watch the crappy movie? In fact, most airlines have removed the in-flight entertainment because you've got your stuff.
Yes, because you have your device. That's exactly right, Leo.
All right, this really does sound... Okay. Sad that we're
okay. Moving right along,
you could meditate, think about things, get a deeper right.
And yeah, don't give me that. My own sister and on Facebook, read a book.
They're
heavy.
Are books allowed? Books are allowed.
Books are still allowed. Free thought is still allowed, as are books. Yay.
But at least for the time being.
For now.
For now.
All right.
That was
so
depressing.
I think the big story of the week in my world.
Yes.
If I may.
Please.
Is that The Guardian, the BBC, the government of the UK, now AT&T.
All pulling
Havas,
advertising.
The big French ad agency pulled their advertising from Google and YouTube.
Yep.
And Google responded immediately.
Yeah. Oh, now YouTube cares. Google has apologized and promised to improve.
Philip Schindler put up new.
We should say why news. They're pulling advertising. They're pulling. This is AT&T's statement, right? AT&T statement, we're deeply concerned that our ads may have appeared alongside YouTube content promoting terrorism and hate. Until Google can ensure this won't happen again, we're removing our ads from Google's non-search platforms. That's YouTube, display advertising. That includes AdSense, right? AdWords. Yep. And AT&T is doing that globally. Verizon is also suspending ads with Google.
Oh, that's a new one to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just customers of Havas anymore. This is really spreading.
No, it was separate. Like The Guardian did it, I think, before Havas did.
BBC is a Havas client. Wow. So Waxo-Smith-Kline.
Go ahead.
GSK. I think that was through Havas. The Royal Mail was through Havas.
Yeah.
This is a media buyer. So Google's response, we don't comment on individual customers, but as announced, we've begun an extensive review of our advertising policies.
The other link on the rundown, I put up
expanded safeguards for advertisers.
So there's a list there.
But this is, it's funny that this should surface now. I mean, this is, advertisers have always complained, the same complaint about Twitter, that you don't know where your ad's going to appear. And for a lot of advertisers that are very conscious about their reputation and their public image, this is an issue. They're reluctant to advertise on Twitter. And I thought they had the same reluctance on YouTube, frankly.
Yeah. I think the timing, in part, is fake news and also Sleeping Giants. You all know Sleeping Giants,
yes? Sleeping Giants, yes.
What is that?
So Sleeping Giants is a Twitter account where they find whoever's been on Breitbart and then they publicly shame them.
Oh.
Shame. Shame.
Whoever's
shame.
Advertising on Breitbart.
Yes. And it could be through Federated or another service, but they don't care. And like they actually called out the New York Times fairly recently.
Amazon, they call out regularly because Amazon separately has affiliate things there and Amazon doesn't cut them off. So there's more than 1,000 advertisers who've now pledged to pull out from Breitbart. Now this is coming out, programmatic. The advertiser does not choose Breitbart. They don't know they're there. But there's a quality issue here. And that's to me the interesting thing here is that so the piece I'm trying to write now, help me write it, is that we're looking at this at the wrong end of the periscope. Right? We're looking down and trying to find all the crap and trying to tamp it down. The easy way to solve this is to create quality networks. Right, which is the way advertising used to work, right? The media brand created something quality. The ad agency chose it as quality. They put the ads there. All was wonderful. It all got screwed up by Google and programmatic and all that. So the way to go back around is to create things that are quality. There's no one definition of quality. It's not easy. It's going to require human effort.
How is what Sleeping Giants is doing different from what Peter Thiel did to Gawker?
One,
good question.
Because you both roundly condemned that.
The difference here is that they're holding the advertiser responsible. They're not going after and suing them to put them out of business. They are saying to an advertiser, I'm going to judge you by the company you keep.
But they are using economic means attempting to put a Breitbart out of business.
Well, in truth, Breitbart doesn't care about its ads. That's gravy. Breitbart is supported by a single family.
But whatever. But that's what the attempt is, right? It's the same thing as the family, you know.
Going after advertisers is a time honored tradition.
I know
actually.
It is. Yes, I know.
It's very different. I would say it's different from suing someone because you're using the same medium, a medium of exchange, like advertising as a medium of exchange, as opposed to switching gears and going after them with the bludgeon of the law. Right. And maybe that's silly and doesn't make a difference, but I'm seriously thinking about this and kind of like, what makes it worthwhile? The outcome is similar, isn't it? But they have a choice. They can say, okay, no, and lose their advertising. And presumably that's because the advertisers are worried because a large number of consumers care about this. Whereas Peter Thiel, a large number of consumers or readers may not care about Gawker's issue. Whereas Peter Thiel has taken it upon himself to do it.
Right.
One is representative.
One takes away all your assets. One cuts your revenue. So there's an exponential difference there.
I don't know. I hate seeing people gang up on people. I don't know.
Well, but it went the other way. So Kellogg's was the first advertiser to be publicly pulled from Breitbart.
Right.
And Breitbart pulled all of its audience to go and boycott Kellogg's. And then I was on Twitter. Mm-hmm.
Did that work,
about
by the way?
New Kellogg's business, I had to buy.
Is Kellogg's business so, going no. down or up?
I have Frosted Flakes in company. My refrigerator right now.
Yes, because I talked to, the head of a major advertising.
You put cereal in your refrigerator?
Hold on. Learn something else now.
Do you have an ant problem?
I guess in Texas, the big bugs would eat it.
Yeah, bugs.
No, it's humid here, and if you leave your cereal out,
it'll be a clump.
Yeah. Okay. Carry on.
I'm sorry, poor Stacey. I will stop being so intrusive. I am not your mother. It's okay. You could put your cereal in the refrigerator.
What, Stacey? What so brand sorry. Of toothpaste do you use?
I'm so sorry.
What brand of toothpaste?
Are you Crest or Colgate?
Toothpaste. Are you Crest or Colgate?
Tom's.
Tom's. Me too. I'm Tom's.
Of course you are. Of course.
I'm Tom's too. But will not do anything but Colgate. She thinks Crest tastes bad. And you could put Crest.
So in the days when you were real Americans, were you Coke or Pepsi?
I don't drink soda.
No.
Dr. Pepper.
Well, you must have at some
back
point
when you were kickboxing
young.
And
Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper, yeah, because she's a Southerner. I did Coca-Cola.
Oh, it tastes like both of those tasted like battery acid. Ugh.
What does it say about you?
Dr. Pepper, you're saying
Dr.
this?
Dr. Pepper tastes like prune juice.
Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper is the only acceptable soda. Or cola, brown soda.
I'm sorry I did that. I was trying to figure out how else to intrude on Stacey's privacy. back to Kellogg's.
Back to
this question about Peter Thiel and...
Okay, it isn't. I understand. It isn't really the same, but I just feel like
it's a good point.
It's a chilling effect on speech.
But it also says we hold responsible.
It's like moral policing, which we kind of do as a society and as people. We say, hey, we think it's really wrong to, I don't know, lie.
I'm probably just afraid that somebody would do that to me, and so
and somebody might. And if enough people did it, Leo.
I'd be out of business.
Maybe it makes sense. I don't know.
Maybe I should be out of business is what you're saying.
If you're promoting something that provides little or no value.
Right.
I don't know.
No, you're right. That's a signal from your audience that they are not happy with you. As opposed to a signal from one billionaire that he's not happy with a story you wrote.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's fair.
We did some research at CUNY a few months ago. Where we looked at native advertising, and one of the surprising findings to me was how much the readers judge both ways. They judge the brand by what media it appears on, and they judge the media by what brands are advertising on it. You judge both ways the company you keep, and to me, this problem we have in media now, this whole fake news argument is again looking the wrong way. We've stopped talking about quality. We basically say we're trying to boil the ocean. Here's all the advertising possible in the world. Oh my God, we have to keep you from going there. As opposed to saying, here are some things we selected that are actually very good. And you can be there. And that creates a new scarcity and the value would be higher. The first question is, do advertisers value quality? Well, they say no. In programmatic and retargeting, I just care about the data about you wanting those boots. I'm going to follow those boots are going to follow you around. I don't care where it appears. Breitbart, I don't care.
Yep.
If the advertisers don't value quality, we're doomed. If you can convince the advertisers to value quality because it has an impact on them, That's what I think is happening. That's why this Havas thing matters.
So quality is a hard thing to do, though, because like the fact that I looked at a pair of boots and the fact that I might be a member of the KKK and love a certain news site are completely irrelevant to the advertiser if I get to click on those boots.
Right.
And so from their perspective, quality only matters if it doesn't generate, or sorry, if it actually generates results. So maybe it's the metrics they matter. I don't know how to think about this. Also, I am being followed by a pair of earrings right now, and it's very tempting.
You keep seeing the ad, huh? They know somehow that you want these.
Rugs and these earrings, they're everywhere.
Wow, that's interesting. Do you put peanuts in your Dr. Pepper?
I have, but I don't on a regular basis. I don't.
What do they do? Dissolve within 30 seconds?
Where are you getting this from? No, they don't dissolve.
I just know you're from Texas, and I was wondering.
Yes, we do some weird things.
More importantly, big news. And we're going to lose our entire audience as they run to the Play Store to download Super Mario Run is now out for Android.
Woo!
Woo!
That is exciting.
Woo! So get going.
I'm excited.
A word of warning. I presume they're doing the same thing on Android that they did on iOS. It seems to be free, but that is only an appearance, because after three levels of Super Mario Run, you will be dinged for $10 if you want to go on.
But they tell you before they ding you, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't get automatically charged, but just understand that you're only going to get three levels. And then just as you're starting to say, hey, I really like this game, they're going to say that'll be $10, please.
So I should not introduce this to my child.
Yeah, it's not really free. Freedom's just another word for nothing else to do. It offers in-app purchases. Yes, indeed. It does indeed.
Now, okay, so it says Super Mario Run can be downloaded for free, and after you purchase the game, you will be able to play the modes with no additional
single
payment required.
There's a single in-app purchase that unlocks the entire game, but it's $10. I don't mind that. It's worth it. It's a great game.
Has it been available on Apple?
Yeah, it came out first on iOS, and it is just today, just now.
Was it $10 there as well?
Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying is this is how they did it on Apple. I don't yet know how they're. Yeah.
No,
they are.
I'm reading the instructions from my Android Play Store.
Yeah.
So it says I can go through from worlds 1-1 to 1-4 or course.
Yeah.
So yes,
you get four levels, and then you'll be dinged $9.99, and then that's it. I public service announcement. That's how they did it on iOS as well. Now we're waiting. There's only one more game that I'm waiting for to make it to Android, and I can finally toss my iPhone, and that's Field Runners Attack. And then I'll be happy. Then I'll be happy.
As opposed to this angry ball of misery that you are at this moment.
I am so unhappy right now because that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Let's take a break. And that was a good story. Thank you, Jeff, for bringing that up. I will let Stacy pick her story.
Ooh.
There's some good IoT stuff out there.
I know which one I'm picking.
All right.
Better be good.
All right.
Put your bets on it right now.
Okay.
The wheel's spinning.
But first, a word from Segment. Segment is plumbing for the data that you've been trying to keep track of about how people use your websites, your mobile apps, your cloud platforms. You know, in the past, the way you would, if you're using, you know, Chartbeat or Google Analytics or, you know, all, you know, Optimizely or Mixpanel or whatever, you would put a line of code in the page and you'd end up having a bunch of lines of code. Some engineer would have to kind of keep an eye on these things. It's kind of a pain. Now, a single line of code turns on Segment, and then you go to your dashboard on Segment and add up to, there are hundreds of different tools you can add that let you keep track of how people are using your stuff, how users are engaging with your business. You don't have to write any custom code. One single API, one single integration will unify all your data from Marketo to MailChimp. Segment is the platform that's used by some of the world's best companies. Atlassian uses it, Intuit, New Relic, Reuters. You could choose from hundreds of partner integrations. including the most popular apps for advertising, analytics, A-B testing, attribution. That's just the A's. With Segment, a developer can quickly integrate a new analytics tool for the data-driven account manager, another one for the app-happy marketer, another for the data scientist who needs a unified data warehouse so she could pick and choose. Segment lets you dig deeper, too. You could bring your data in from any source, import historical data, and customize what data ends up in your data warehouse of choice. Best of all, if one of these services is down, don't worry. Segment will continue to gather the data until it comes back up, so you never miss a bit. Spend your time using your analytics data and acting on it, not struggling with custom integrations. Thanks to Segment, you and your CEO will love your quickly deployed integrations with tools like Zendesk and Intercom and AppNexus. And you just see there's a list. In fact, you can just go to segment.com/twit, take a look at the list of integrations, and then sign up for 3 months free. Over 8,000 of the world's best companies use Segment to drive growth and revenue. You can too. Segment.com/twit. And we thank you for their support of this week in Google. Now, Stacey Higginbotham's story of the week.
Well, I lied too. I have to. So, okay, here's the story I was going for in case anyone had money on it, was the Google Home Beauty and the Beast ad.
Which I have an opinion on, but go ahead.
Okay.
We'll do that later. That'll be my story.
Let's talk about that.
Oh, all right.
Actually, and, you know.
Have you, now you have a Google Home, right?
I do.
Yeah. So
I did not get the My Day experience. I did not get the Beauty and the Beast ad, which is a shame because I am in the target market.
Well, let me play what some people. So the My Day, explain that, Stacey. What is My Day?
It is your wake up with, like, I think of it as talk morning radio, but it's your commute time, your news briefs, your weather. I feel like you can add things to it. You can customize it. I don't actually use the feature all that often.
How do you ask for it?
Well, sometimes I do just by accident. I say, good morning. Okay. You know who? Good morning. And she'll say, good morning, Leo. Today is March 22nd, 2017.
All right. So let me confuse her. Okay, Google. Good morning.
Hey, Jeff. Here's a look at your evening. The time is 5:30.
So she's telling you what time it is, what the weather's like, your calendar. So here, let me play this, though, because this doesn't work anymore. This is from Twitter.
Okay, Google, stop.
This is a demonstration of the Beauty and the Beast problem.
Okay, Google, stop. Now I'm in NPR land. It won't listen to me. Okay, NPR. Okay, Google, stop.
Just take it off the internet.
Okay, Google, what's my day like?
Hello, Bryson. The time is 7:44 a.m. The weather in Park Ridge currently is 21 degrees and sunny, with a high of 37 degrees. Your commute to work is currently 39 minutes by public transit. By the way, Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast opens today.
Yay!
This version of the story, Belle is the inventor instead of Maurice. That rings truer if you ask me. For some more movie fun, ask me to tell you something about Belle.
Now, was that a paid ad from Disney?
Here's the latest news.
They said no, right?
I don't think so. So they've done this every day. They'll do this. They did one on Steve Martin's birthday. They said, today's Steve Martin's birthday, and they did a little bit of King Tut. I think they're just trying to have fun. These are obviously human editors write these, and I think that this was – I think it was a mistake, obviously. It looks like an ad, but I don't think it was intended to be an ad. Do you think, Stacey?
Well, so here's the deal. I don't care if it was an ad or not, because Google – came back saying it wasn't an ad, and people were like, well, and there. But the only thing that matters is, did money or some item of value change hands?
Right.
If it did, then it needs to be tagged.
Yeah.
And I think this gets to, though, how pernicious some of these marketing agreements can be when we talk about, like, IoT and even our phones, things that suggest, like, contextually aware applications that suggest things to you. So I think it's really important we have, and I'm going to use that famous bright line rules about what we decide is an ad and how we make people disclose it on small screens, in voice apps, et cetera. Because this is, and it's damaging to Google. I mean, think about how many people were like, "Urgh."
It is. I think it was a mistake, but I don't think it was a paid ad. But
it, and, you
but,
know,
it sounded like one, so that was a big mistake on their part.
Well, and what about these marketing agreements? I mean, that's
well,
part
I'll
of the
give
challenge.
You an example. Remember when Google named Android KitKat, and they said then no money's changed hands, but that was clearly promotional, right?
Well, I was thinking about the Harry Potter implementation on the phones around the Fantastic Beasts.
Right, but those are ads.
Well, yes, I assume that was an ad.
The FTC has very strict rules. You can't, don't they? Maybe not.
They do. Okay. They have it for bloggers.
Right. We can't, for instance, I can't tweet, hey, I really love Segment on Twitter without saying hashtag ad or hashtag sponsor or our sponsor Segment. You have to indicate very clearly this is an ad or this is paid placement. Actually, it doesn't even have to be paid placement. They wouldn't necessarily have to pay me for that tweet for it to have to be disclosed. They pay me for ads elsewhere, so I have to disclose that. They're very clear on that for bloggers. Maybe less so for artificial intelligence. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think there are any rules yet for AIs
or IoT devices. But we don't want is a world where we get these all the time. Constantly thrown.
And you also want some option. We can play you the theme from Beauty and the Beast. Would you like to hear it?
Tale as old as time.
Ooh, you have a nice voice.
No.
No, I like the you have a deep voice. It sounds good. They did play a little music, right? Smoky. A little piano music. I don't know if that was from Beauty and the Beast. And then they said, ask me something about Belle. Encouraging interaction. But that's kind of how Google Home is. It's a little playful. They're trying to. I don't know. I think it was a mistake.
Well, and it's just a time waster. And think about like on your car, if you're driving and, you know, there's an ad that's relevant to like a certain place you might be right now. Your car could suggest, hey, want to grab a burger? You're right by such and such. Or maybe you ask your car, hey, what's for lunch? Is there a restaurant near me? And then seeing that, you know, getting that via voice, how are we going to mark that as an ad, right? Because like right now, if I ask Google that in my phone, it gives me the sponsored listings and it gives me all the other listings, right?
It's all kinds of really fascinating challenges. Voice puts together, I get three challenges off the bat. First is monetization.
Yeah.
Second is branding is very difficult. And third is when you ask a question to Google and it gives you an answer, as we've seen recently, it may be the wrong answer. But it gave you one answer because there's only one opportunity for an answer.
We had a good discussion last week on that. I'm sorry you weren't here, Jeff, because I said this is the problem when you go from being a search engine to being a fact engine. And I think that this is a real difficult challenge because a search engine would give you multiple results, some of which might be fake news, but there would still be legitimate search results. But if you're going to say, I'm going to give you the one true fact about this, that is a heavy burden you're putting on yourself. And I think Google shouldn't even get in that position, but that's up to them, obviously.
That's what you need in an on-demand, contextually aware kind of
service. It's what you want. Yeah. Yeah.
So
you don't want 20 results. Well, let me give you 15 search pages you could go to. That's not useful.
Here are the options. Yeah. Now, I wonder if something like, so in our show, when I do an advertisement, one, I announce that it's an ad, but we also have little music playing underneath as a way to like delineate it as different from the rest of the content. And it's the same music every time.
That's a good idea. So you have a little ad bed that you use.
Yeah. Oh, that's a cute way to call it.
Is that why? That's interesting. That was your idea?
It was actually my partner's idea. So, but we just, he was like, hey, why don't you play some music to make it.
So then you'll know.
Even if you skip through and you're in the middle of the ad, you're still getting the undercurrent.
We could try that. That's interesting. I mean, I think we're pretty clear when we go to an ad and when we come out of it.
Yeah, you're very clear.
But I've often thought maybe we should be clearer so there'd be no confusion. I never, ever want to be in a position where people think think an ad is content. Obviously. And I think that's the problem Google got into. There's no clear way to say, this is not an ad. I'm just giving you something I think you'd be interested in, which is that Beauty and the Beast opens this weekend. And it was a huge weekend and
massive opening. I was actually really surprised.
You heard, by the way, the kid, in that tweet, there was a kid going, yeah, because Google Home did the right thing. Cause that kid was really excited. Right. So maybe Google knew there's a 7-year-old in that house that's going to be very excited about this.
Oh, then why didn't I get it? We're right in the
be your guest. Be your guest. Put your guest. Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No idea.
No idea.
I'm a little sad now.
Occasionally, by the way, somebody's saying, well, you know, your Audible ads verge on content. I'm not saying we won't stick content in the ads. I just don't want to mix ads into the content. I don't want you to be listening to content and think you're hearing, listening to an ad and think you're hearing. I don't want you to be listening to our show when we sneak an ad in under the. But if you're in the middle of an ad and I mentioned there's some great books I like, that's content, but I don't think that's confusing. I hope it's not.
We also used to do unpaid ads on the show.
This show? Oh, yeah, for Chipotle.
Chipotle.
And Glee.
Bastards.
Bastards. Never give. No, you know what? Some guy was here. He was like the IT guy from Chipotle. Gave me a ton of Chipotle. In fact, we had Chipotle lunch today.
So one burrito?
No. No, we got lunch for 20. He gave us a coupon that said lunch for 20. And we fed the whole staff today at Chipotle on that coupon. By the way, thank you, whoever you are, masked man.
Wow.
Fantana says I sneak ads in.
No, you don't.
I feel bad if I do that. Good. And maybe we do need to get a little tinkle-tinkle bed. Can I borrow your tinkle-tinkle bed?
I am not answering that question at all.
What is the song?
That's a Trump Moscow joke. But I'm not going there.
Yeah, at the Ritz-Carlton. It's
my theme music. It's the intro theme music.
I like
music.
That idea. Maybe I should do them. Somebody's saying you should do them in a funny voice.
And now it's time for
the advertiser's going to love that.
I don't know about that.
Lisa's running out right now to strangle you.
Well, advertisers, of course, always want your ad to sound like content. They don't want it to seem like an ad. So
get Pink Floyd. Get the rights to Pink Floyd's money, and then
ching ching. Have cash registers. Have cash registers going in the background. Sure, why not? Yeah, that's what Paul Harvey did. He would go. Now, I don't think anybody knew that that's what this meant, but he would say page two, and then he'd read an ad. Page three, and that was his way of signifying it was an ad, which was weird. But
I think you should play. I've been working on the railroad. Every time you go,
I'm going to play. I've been working on the railroad. I love it.
Okay,
or nice. Perhaps 16 tons. What do you get?
Another day older
and deeper in debt.
We like that song because it's in our key, which is deep.
I was going to say, wow.
the deep key. So our conclusion is that Google probably didn't intend to put Beauty and the Beast in there. I would certainly hope that they don't. If they were thinking at any point about paid placement in the Google Homes messages, they probably have stopped thinking about that.
So, that's a terrible place to put it, too, because that's like, yeah. I mean, it's great from an exposure perspective, but that's like information you need fast.
Right.
And then done. Although they did it at the end, in fairness.
Do you think they're going to do that? That's really it. Well, they didn't. No, you know what? They didn't do it at the end because the next thing then was news briefs. And so it isn't at the end. In fact, it's the beginning of the stuff that really becomes useful, which is the news.
Now, the weather is the most useful part.
I hope we don't see that because that really would make Amazon's Echo less useful and all these things less useful. That's interesting. I mean, it is a free service.
Both of them are adding. The question is, are these transactional devices?
I buy stuff on Home all the time. Everybody knows that. I mean, on the Echo. And Home has just added purchases, too.
Yes, they just added local. But, okay, so let's break this apart. You pay for the device. The service itself is gathering incredibly valuable data about you.
Right.
Both of those platforms use in other places.
They're getting paid, in other words. They're getting plenty of value out of it.
Yeah. Unless no one ever looks on the web again, I promise that Google's getting plenty of value out of this. Amazon, it's a no-brainer for them.
Right. I order stuff all the time from Amazon. In fact, the latest is that you can order Amazon now. I'm not in one of the cities. Maybe Austin's one of those cities, but you
can't.
It's
not. I know.
And I know that New Jersey's not. But you can actually ask your Amazon Echo now to get something to you within 2 hours.
Yeah. Some places you can actually get beer and wine served to you, too.
Wow.
I want Amazon, Mama needs a drink. Then, it'd be amazing.
Oh, you eat alone, you drink alone.
Can you, but the real test is, can you order Dr. Pepper with peanuts in it?
Probably not. No.
Get them quick before they dissolve.
Do the peanuts dissolve?
I don't really know.
What is the point of the peanuts? They're just salty. They add a nice little flavor to it.
They add a little extra flavor. Maybe they do dissolve. I've never kept them. I always...
I'm making it up, but I just figure it's... you know that old saw that if you put Coke on tar on a bumper, it would dissolve it?
Oh, sure it would. That's very acidic. Coke's very acidic, yeah.
We used to do that. We used to clean our pennies with Taco Bell sauce, which is just sugar.
Damn. I like that.
And you did guacamole facials? What?
Oatmeal.
Oatmeal. Oatmeal works.
Oatmeal. Guacamole is good for your hair.
Starbucks has a new smashed avocado product.
What?
BuzzFeed reviewed
what?
It.
What?
Yeah.
What is this?
Smashed toast. Because the avocado toast is...
Oh, I love avocado toast.
I had avocado toast at lunch.
Now Starbucks,
it's the best thing ever.
Has avocado spread and BuzzFeed decreed it looked like baby poop on a bagel.
Starbucks has finally jumped on the avocado toast trend. Oh, it comes in a little metal schmear bucket.
A metal schmear bucket?
and they apparently have sous vide eggs as well.
Oh, yeah, I did see those. Yes.
Mm. Oh, I'm not getting avocado out of a schmear bucket. There's no
way.
Wait,
hold on.
No, because it's not smashed and fresh.
Yeah, that's guacamole.
That's the idea. Yeah,
it's guacamole. I was like, there's a company called Holy Guacamole, and it is. They actually serve it. They have these little, I love these things, by the way. They're 100 calorie packs, and I don't care that they're 100 calorie packs. They're 2 tablespoons of avocado, like guacamole.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's salt, avocado, vinegar, and I think that's it. There may be like another seasoning in there, but those things are awesome. I love them.
So Julia Reinstein decided to do a science experiment with Tanya Chen on Twitter, leaving the... avocado schmear bucket open and out to see how long it would take to turn brown. 18 hours later, not just brown, black.
Well, yeah, good.
No, that's not good.
Good, yeah.
That means it's fresh.
Yeah. But you know what? If you live in an area where you can get avocados at a reasonable price, and that, by the way, as soon as we build the wall and we have to start tariffing, is not going to be easy. Boy, that I threw in a little. You know, I should have a little hashtag political. A little, maybe a little. I could play a little music underneath that.
Music there too, yeah.
Da 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 da.
International.
Anyway, get a fresh avocado and fork mash it on a nice piece of toast. That's a fabulous meal.
You should add. So I'm gonna. You should add salt.
Salt and pepper.
And for avocado toast, a little lime juice.
A little bit of lime juice. That's how they do it in Texas.
Don't you think a little hot sauce, too?
I'm sorry. No, a little lemon. Not lime is for guac.
Lemon.
Lemon is for your avocado toast. Sorry.
By the way, Stacey.
Yes, ma'am.
Peas and guacamole?
Oh, no. That's
no. Who puts peas in guacamole?
Exactly. That's weird.
New York Times.
The New York Times.
No.
Oh, I agree.
That's some Manhattanite's idea of guacamole. New York City!
So when the Washington Post put its new slogan up, you know, democracy dies in darkness, yes. There were a lot of suggested ones. My favorite was, we would never put peas in guacamole.
That's good.
What do you think of that slogan, democracy dies in darkness?
I like it. What do you think, Stacey?
Sketchy. I don't know if it explains. I mean, it doesn't explain anything that what journalists do, I guess.
Democracy dies in darkness. It sounds, I don't know, it sounds so
grim.
Grim, yeah.
But we're living in grim times.
Democracy dies in darkness. I don't even think it's technically correct, by the way. Otherwise, we'd have no democracy at night. So, I understand the theory, but... It just does not send me.
Yeah, all right.
Anymore. Anyway, the trunk.
I sure caused a detour on this train.
It's the trunk. Oh, there is no detour on this train. It says, you're thinking we have tracks. There is no tracks.
I was going to say, there's much.
This is an off-road show.
This is an off-road show, if ever there ever was one.
You're going through dunes.
I feel so bad for Kansas City.
Losing their Google Fiber?
What's going on?
Nope.
But it's there, right? They have some installs, and then it just stopped.
Who was I? Mark Cantor tweeted. He'd been spending days, years going back and forth from Cleveland to Kansas City trying to set up a business based on Google Fiber. And he was very sad. He said, wasted. Google has canceled Google Fiber. Many Kansas City residents who've been waiting years for Google Fiber to install service at their homes recently received emails canceling their installations, according to Ars Technica, with no word on whether they'll ever get internet service. The speculation is the number of cancellations in the metro is as many as 2,700. So it was not going to be a lot of people anyway. But boy, that's got to be disappointing if you've been.
That's going to hurt.
I'm in Austin, where they were. I mean, they launched and then it stopped. And what happens? I mean, I assume they're going to sell this as an asset to somebody. Wouldn't you think?
I don't. If anybody wants it,
having that much fiber, because they built their own infrastructure.
They have the fiber in.
Yeah. Well, in Austin, I don't remember the exact number of route miles they put in. Oh, hey.
Hey, UPS guy's here.
I was like, gadget delivery. Sorry about that. But they've actually installed like thousands for sure of route miles of fiber in the ground. And now what happens to that? Who wants that? I would think it's a great asset, but I could be wrong.
So Google sent this response to DSL Reports. Google Fiber loves Kansas City and is here to stay. We've been grateful to be part of your community since 2011 and for the opportunity to provide super fast internet to residents. We recently announced our expansion into Raymore. We're continuing to build an overland park and can't wait for even more customers in Kansas City to experience what's possible with Google Fiber.
So what happened with these people?
Some of them has been waiting as long as 18 months for service, but Google doesn't explain what's happening to them. We had mentioned that Google was cutting back, that they were canceling. Wasn't Kansas City the second city, or was it the first city?
It was the first city. It was the inaugural city.
Yeah.
Because I remember vividly being there and being all excited and the joy, the thrill, learning that Kansas City is the city of fountains.
Did you live? Oh, you went there to cover it.
I did. Wow. They have a terrible airport.
You know, that's the problem with America. We have second-class airports, but that's going to change, my friends, thanks to the great infrastructure spending that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Google is letting celebs speak directly to fans via search results.
This they did during the election, but now they're broadening it. You should sign up for this.
It's going to cost money, right? So it's called Posts. And you can post status updates that will appear. So when somebody searches for you, they will get a status update. So if you're searching for, this is Google's quote, if you're searching for Henry Ford Museum in the U.S., very fine museum, by the way, in Dearborn, or for Vanessa da Mata in Brazil, you'll see updates directly from the source with relevant information like new exhibits, timely updates, and interesting facts. Do you have to pay for that? Is it an ad?
I don't think so.
Oh, it's like Twitter on Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, as long as it's part of search proper, I don't think they charge.
So it says, your presence on Google, fresher than ever. Up-to-date posts from verified people or places or things. Oh, we should do this. Posting on Google. Yeah. Request access. Who can post? We've opened up posting to museums, sports teams, sports leagues, and movies in the U.S., plus musicians in Brazil. That's it. What? Okay, so I'm not a movie or a sports league or a kind of a museum. I could release songs in Brazil. That's so weird. So you have to be one of those, huh? That's why they mentioned the Henry Ford Museum.
Why a movie? Why not a TV show?
Wait, why people in Brazil? Is this an old Orkut remnant? So
everything is more advanced on the internet in Brazil.
Apply to post on Google. Email address, first and last name, entity name, and then category. Movie, museum, sports team, sports league, or other.
Try the other. famous internet show?
I'm big in Brazil. How about that? But do you think that'll work?
So Brazil, Photolog took off in Brazil before there was any other photo services.
What is Photolog?
Whatchamacallit. Photolog was Scott Heiferman, the founder of Meetup. His prior company was Photolog. Before there was Flickr, there was Photolog. It was huge.
It was a photo sharing site?
Brazil is the only country that licensed a version of Blogger before it was sold to Google.
That's cool.
Brazil was, of course, the one success story, kind of one of two, of Orkut. Brazil is unsung for being ahead on every internet trend. Nobody pays attention.
Well, it's a massive population, big country.
Brazilian singers on Google.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. I wonder, though, this could almost make Google like kind of, it wouldn't be Twitter, but it'd be the part of Twitter that celebrities and brands use to kind of broadcast what they're up to. I mean, we use Twitter that way. We'll say, you know, this week in Google is coming up, things like that on our at Twitter account. This is interesting. You think this is something Google's looking at? Maybe they could kind of become the next Twitter in a more responsible fashion? What do you think?
That a question?
You lose the conversation. There's no conversation at all. It's all broadcast.
That's why they like it better. Nobody can answer back.
Right.
No one can complain to you and engage you. I think it has a place to, I mean, for me, it's one and the same. It's the conversation and the broadcast. But for a lot of entities and even people, just having a broadcast medium is probably really relevant. I mean, there's a timeliness that needs to happen with search results that makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially in like a always on kind of live streaming world. So
it's very interesting. And how will you feel when you get those results in your search? So you search for
value.
Yeah, I think so. You search for a team, Kansas City Royals, and you get, and by the way, we're playing tonight or whatever.
Yeah. We're playing tonight and we need to sell, we've discounted our seats.
Yeah.
That
would be valuable. Oh, if you're searching for that brand, that would be valuable.
Yeah. I mean, Spotify kind of does this. They let you know if you play an artist. They're like, hey, by the way, this artist is playing near you in the next month.
I like that feature a lot.
See? And that's awesome.
That's useful. Yeah. Okay.
So
do it, Google. We give you our approval.
And does it now? People don't have to use it that way, but it'd be a good way to use it, I think.
Let's take a break. More to come. Stacey Higginbotham's here from Stacey on IoT, the IoTpodcast.com. Jeff Jarvis from CUNY and BuzzMachine.com. Are you traveling again soon, Jeff, or are you going to get to be home for a while?
I'm going to be on for a while. I go to Perugia.
Oh, I love Perugia.
First week of April.
They have a news thing there, don't they?
They do. Oh, yeah, journalism thing. Yes, journalism thing. Yes, yeah. I'm going there.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Stacey, if you want to get that, go ahead.
I was about to say, sorry, guys.
Your doorbell is ringing.
Just run and see what the dog's all excited about. Could be something exciting for us. Our show today brought to you by my mattress. I'm going to get some more Caspers. I am such a fan of the Casper mattress. I have become an evangelizer for Casper in my own, family and friends. When they say, I didn't sleep well last night, I say, you need a Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. But I'm not even going to focus on how you save money. You're going to love this mattress. This is an amazing mattress. They spent a lot of time engineering the perfect sleep experience. It's made of supportive memory foams. There are no springs. Forget the spring. Forget the lump. You know how lumpy mattresses, with the spring? Forget that. They're never a lump. It's just the right sink, but it's firm too. Just the right bounce. I don't know. It's kind of a best of both worlds. Its breathable design means you'll sleep cool as we get warmer and warmer months. It's going to be in the 80s here next week. You're going to want a cool sleeping mattress. So even when it's winter, I get hot sometimes at night. It's nice to have a mattress that breathes. And by the way, it smells great right out of the box. Comes in a surprisingly compact box, so it's easy to move in. It's going to give you long-lasting comfort and support. You can buy it online. And here's the most important thing. It is completely risk free, because if at any time in the first 100 nights you say, I'm not a fan, you call them, courier will come, take it away from you and refund you every penny. There is no risk. They do that because they don't have a showroom and they know you're going to want to try before you buy. But they also do that because they know, and I bet, I don't know what the figures are, but nobody says no. Once you try the Casper, you go, okay, it won't take you 100 nights. In about 2 nights, you go, okay, why did I wait? I hear from people all the time, not just family and friends, but on Twitter and everywhere, people saying, I love this. What? Thank you. Free delivery, painless returns, free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. Casper, Casper, Casper. Save an additional $50 towards your mattress purchase by going to casper.com/twig and using our promo code TWIG. That's casper.com/twig. Promo code TWIG. Terms and conditions apply. casper.com/twig. All right, Stacey, was it something exciting?
I got a toy.
Yay. Ooh.
This is that? Hold on. It is the Skybell.
Oh.
Trim.
It is trim, isn't it? Now, I had a Skybell before we got Ring, and Ring's a sponsor, their competitor. But I tried, somebody called me and said I was having trouble with Skybell, so I ordered one on the radio show. So I ordered one just to try it, and I never got it working either, but I guess they've gotten better. And
oh my
I have
God,
to say
love-
that looks good. You like your Skybell.
I do. I'm updating it. I did the doorbell thing for the wire cutter. So I did Skybell Ring.
Oh, good.
Yes.
You better not say you don't like the Ring.
It was my number two choice.
Okay. But Skybell was your number one choice.
Skybell was my number one choice because at the time, Ring didn't have HD support. And when I initially started, and this changed it, it moved it up actually. It didn't have a live view.
Right.
It does now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that moved it. But
well,
so,
you know what's great? It's a very competitive space.
It is.
And both these companies have demonstrated a real market here. So that's good. We're going to see improvements. Yeah.
Oh, you want an update? This is an IoT update. So you guys may not care so much.
We need a song for that. IoT update. Been working on the railroad. What is the IoT update?
For Ring folks, they did not buy, but there was a company in Philadelphia called Zonoff that is a systems integrator behind the Staples Connect hub that is now defunct, Somfy's Tacoma home system, and a bunch of other connected products. Well, Somfy ran into some problems. An acquisition fell through. So Ring hired all 80 of the Zonoff employees and now has a new Philadelphia office. And the reason they did it is because they're going to really focus on their integrations with other products. So, yay. Oh, there it is. Ta-da.
Did Ring not just announce new hardware too? They're doing something else new. I feel like they're branching out, aren't they?
The Ring doorbell, the skinny doorbell, is coming my way. They also have an outdoor camera.
Yeah, we've mentioned that in the ads.
And they have the light.
Is it a forehead light?
This is the two security lights looking at your yard here.
Oh, the lights are new. They didn't have those before. All right.
So they're doing stuff.
They have a lot of investment capital, so.
Yeah, they just raised $109 million at the end of January.
Yeah, they're going to be well-positioned.
They're going for that IPO. So we'll see. Exciting.
Here comes, Nougat is already being eclipsed. The next version of Android is coming into beta, Android O.
Takes all the suspense out of it.
Wait, well, do we know what it's called?
OMG, we do not.
Oh.
Oreo jokes have been made.
Oreo would make sense.
Throw us off.
I don't know. Better battery life. What's new in O? Here's what's new in O. Background limits. Building on the work we began in Nougat, Android O puts a big priority on improving battery life. That is actually the biggest thing that I would say Android needs to work on compared to iOS. Because iOS is very good very aggressive about killing background tasks, and as a result gets very, very good battery life on much less battery. The way if you're an Android device, you handle this is just by putting in big old batteries. So there are automatic limits in O on what apps can do in the background. In three main areas, implicit broadcast, background services, and location updates. This will make it easier, says Google, to create apps that have minimal impact on a user's battery. Notification channels. These are new app-defined categories for notification content. Channels let developers give users fine-grained control over different kinds of notifications. So in the past, all you've been able to do is say, I don't want a notification from you. Now you'll be able to say, I want this kind, but not that kind. That's good, right? New visuals and grouping to notifications that make it easier for users to see what's going on. Autofill APIs. So I use LastPass for autofill, which is awesome. But this will make a standard operating system-wide autofill API available to apps. So they won't have to kind of do, you know, LastPass, you have to turn on stuff and things. They have to kind of do a accessibility workaround and stuff. So this is welcome news. That means that your password manager will be better at autofilling in passwords. Picture in picture. So, you know, we already have that with YouTube, right? When you're watching a YouTube video, it can go down into a little thumbnail as you do other applications. There's a new app overlay window for apps to use instead of a system alert window and a multi-display support. Actually, I think this is going to be interesting.
Different from the split screen?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good for it's handsets. Okay.
Multi-display support is interesting because, and you're seeing this already, Windows Phone has it. It's called, begins with a C, I can't remember, but the idea is that your phone is going to be your computer, and if you can plug it into a display and keyboard, suddenly it's a full-size computer. And these phones are so powerful now. I think this is going to be a big category in the years to come. So you don't have more than one computer. You have one device that can be a desktop, a laptop.
Consider the earlier conversation. You go abroad and you rent a screen and a keyboard,
right,
and this is your computer.
Right. I'm guessing, but that sounds like multi-display support for launching an activity on a remote display. That sounds... Maybe more. This is more like Chromecast. I don't know. Font resources in XML. Mm-hmm. Adaptive icons to help you integrate better with the device UI. Mm-hmm. This is for developers. Wide gamut color for apps. This is good. New Bluetooth audio codecs like LDAC. I'm not familiar with LDAC. New Wi-Fi features like Wi-Fi Aware, previously known as Neighbor Awareness Networking, or NAN. With the appropriate hardware, apps and nearby devices can discover and communicate over Wi-Fi without an internet access point. Ooh. Interesting. Some sort of ad hoc.
Oh, ad hoc networking?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. For the longest time, I used to run Serval so we could do ad hoc networking, but no one else ran it, so I gave up.
Sounds like it'll be built into Android O.
That is so nerdy awesome.
Nerdy awesome.
I think that, think about that for like protests, but also think about what you could do from a community standpoint or just even at conferences. Oh, so fun. Okay.
Nice.
Sorry.
Like it. Keyboard navigation, arrow and tab navigation, audio API for pro audio. This is something that's really been a problem in the past on Android. Actually, I'm glad to see they're addressing this. It wasn't really Android's fault. It was because of the kernel they were using. But latency on Android was too high for really professional music apps. So there is a new audio API that will have a high-performance, low-latency audio streams. That's very interesting for musicians. You know, that's why there's not a lot of great music apps on Android. Web view enhancements, Java 8 partner platform. This is some big changes, but not so much UI changes as kind of API changes. I think, isn't that kind of... I feel like that's what Google said, is that they're going to do a TikTok thing where they update the interface and then they update under the hood and they update the interface in the next one. Maybe I'm mistaken that with somebody else, but that would make sense.
I really should talk to all these IoT companies about how they plan to how they've planned to implement and update their Android on the back end for all of their devices that are running versions of Android. Because a lot of them don't spend a lot of time on that, right. I don't think.
Well, do they do iOS? Is that why? Is it like that's the platform of choice?
No, they build their stuff on Android.
Oh, on Android. Oh, I was
going
to ask
you. June is Android.
That's right.
There's other things. I think the Nucleus conference system thing is built on Android. So
interesting.
It's out there. It's open.
Yeah, it's free.
It's free.
Free. Article by Andy Greenberg in Wired saying there's good news. Half of all Android devices have gotten fairly recent security patches. The bad news is half of Android devices haven't. But he says that in its annual report on security that Google released this week, the company says, and I think they're probably right, Android security is getting better, less malware in the Play Store, devices more often encrypted than not, and more hackers than ever report Android bugs to Google for bug bounties instead of selling them to the highest bidder in the private market. Or giving them to the CIA. He also writes, Google's released solid data for the first time on Android's most serious nagging security problem, the challenge of getting dozens of manufacturers and hundreds of carriers around the world to patch their phones. So 50% is a lot better than before, still obviously only halfway there. But it's going to be hard on those cheap old phones to get those patched.
I liked the effort they put into the Google Play Store, like all the security efforts they've put around that and monitoring for crappy devices.
They're doing a very good job on an operating system that really is open and perhaps a little more vulnerable because of it. I think I don't feel insecure on my Android device. Do you?
I don't want to say I don't, because then someone will be like, I accept your challenge.
I accept. Have at you. Because I'm using a Pixel, I'm as safe as Android can be, and I feel like it's secure enough. I really do.
Yeah, no, I do.
Yeah.
On this, if you play the summary video for about 2 minutes in the 30-minute long video, you hear Kevin.
Oh.
I'm trying to see if he's, that's not him.
Do they give him,
Nope, you just hear his voice.
Oh, no credit, huh? What is he saying?
He's talking about actually security in the Android Play Store. That's his. He's the voice behind that little video.
It's a year in review.
Hi, my name is Adrian Ludwig.
Hi, Aaron.
The Android security team here at Google.
Hi, how you doing?
Just this week, we released our 2016 year in review.
Where am I going to see this? How far?
I'm looking. I'm scrolling. Oh, wait. Is that it? Oh, so it looks like somewhere in 13 minutes in, maybe.
All right.
13:13 is where you see it.
This is pretty good. 80% encryption rate is that's impressive.
That is good.
That's really good.
Protection that gets more powerful every second. It starts when an Android developer uploads their app to Google Play. A self-learning app risk analyzer scans and simulates apps looking for potential security issues.
He has a very nice voice. It's very friendly.
That's why he's my co-host.
Oh, really? Not because of his brains or his good looks?
No. It's just his voice.
Just because of his nice voice.
Just the audio soothing pixels.
Nice voice. 1.4 billion Android users. That's another takeaway from this report. 1.4 billion. Instagram this week announced they have 400 million daily active users. Big growth for Instagram, by the way.
Jesus.
That's I think mostly at the expense of Snap, I would guess. I always liked Instagram. I have to say I use it less now because of the stories. It's purely psychological because you could just use it as you always did, just scroll past them. Mm-hmm. But those videos, they're there. They're begging me to click on them, and I don't want to.
That's a revenue model for many publications, Leo. It's how they're targeting the youngs.
The youngs. That's how we get the youngs.
It's the youth.
The Utes.
Oh, I can't believe I screwed that up.
No, Young's is good. I like Young's. You just created your own thing.
My own words.
I like Utes, too.
Utes. Yeah, I am on Instagram primarily to follow people who have corgis.
A very good. Do you have corgis?
What kind of dog? What kind of dog do you have?
I don't have corgis, but I have a mutt.
But corgis are cute because they have short legs and big fat butts.
And they have those.
Are we ever going to meet your dog?
They waggle them and little pointy ears.
If you want to meet my dog,
yeah. Can we meet your dog
right now?
Just Jeff. Do you have a UPS costume?
Before the show's over.
I was like, okay, yeah.
Just get before the show. Just put your brown shorts on, Jeff.
You don't want to see that.
No, we don't.
I actually have brown shorts. I have a UPS costume in my closet over here. I should put it on. Next week, I'll wear my UPS costume. It's a long story.
Like, you know what? Those are not questions you actually want to know the answer to, Jeff, by the way.
Leo, why do you have a UPS costume?
Excuse me, ma'am. I have a delivery for you.
I have a delivery.
And we're done. Did we talk about on any of our shows, because this is something Congress is considering this week, the FCC or the Internet Privacy Rules?
Oh, this makes me mad. Is this going to pass? This makes me so mad.
I don't know. I want it not to pass. It feels like, how could this? This is so directly anti-consumer.
I just don't understand how. Okay.
Because,
So thanks to Senator Jeff Flake, aptly named. Tonight, the Senate will be voting on a measure that's actually a resolution of disapproval. So it wouldn't be an affirmative measure. It is just to overturn the existing FCC privacy order that prevents internet service providers from selling your data, your surfing history, for instance, to advertisers. Protecting your privacy. So here's an update from Recode. The Senate voted tonight to begin debating the measure, putting lawmakers on track for a final vote to roll back the FCC rules tomorrow. If it's in the Senate, that means this has already passed the House, or is it only the Senate that needs to?
No, it can go either way.
It can go either way. Okay.
Yeah.
If lawmakers prevail tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay.
Of course, the House would rubber stamp it because the House, then the FCC's privacy rules would be wiped from the books. And who likes this idea? Well, guess Verizon, AT&T, Comcast,
wireless and wired.
Everybody.
So this is anybody who's providing you a pipe to the internet can take your in right now. For example, Google doesn't take your data. I know people, like when Google Fiber came out, people were like, I'm not getting my internet through Google. They're going to look at what I'm doing. And Google is like, heck no, we're not. So this would actually allow them to if they want to.
How does this do anything but just hand over our information to people who give Congress money to run? I mean, this is so anti-consumer.
It is. The argument from ISPs is twofold. One is sort of legit in the sense that their life is a little challenging at the moment. And the other is blatantly not legit. So the legit argument is because of a federal court ruling in the 9th district, some states have different privacy rules, different rules governing how ISPs can use your information than others. So the idea is doing it at a federal level makes more sense because, you know, state by state regulations for a nationwide provider suck, right? So obviously, the ISPs are like, oh, well, yeah, we need to take all the rules away. This is terrible. It's very difficult to enforce some privacy rules in some states and not in others. So
this, by the way, if approved by the House and the Senate, would effectively permanently ban the FCC from ever writing any privacy rules. And according to the EFF, the Federal Trade Commission is already barred from policing internet service providers. So, in other words, there would be nobody at the federal level protecting your privacy online.
Nope.
And remember, so a while back, AT&T let people, let. They offered a cheaper version of their gigabit right. plan for people who gave up their privacy.
Right.
And a lot of people did that because it was freaking expensive to avoid
and that's
privacy
fair
attack.
Because you're...
Well, no, no, it was not fair. The FCC actually was investigating that. And then Ajit Pai became the chairman of the FCC and that's no longer on the table.
Although I think, I mean, I'm willing to compromise. That seems like a, at least you're
no.
giving that. No,
no,
why not?
No, because
why is that a bad idea?
One, they were not transparent about how much you have to pay. So it wasn't just a discount. It was you paid more over time for your privacy. Two, you only have a choice of two broadband providers. In some places, you only have a choice of one. And so charging people for keeping their privacy is inherently it's inherently anti-consumer. Especially if they don't have any other recourse.
Let me be clear. The Senate is going to vote tomorrow on overturning rules that prevent Comcast and AT&T and Verizon and your internet service provider from selling your private information to the highest bidder. And, you know, so, people are so upset. We hear about it all the time. Oh, Google. Oh, Facebook. No one knows more about what you do online than your internet service provider.
Yeah, this includes the websites that you go to. This includes when you're online. It includes data on how many devices you have online.
And here's the key. Here's the absolute key of this is that much of what you do online has no PII. Your cookie, your phone company, and your ISP have your name and your address.
Right.
It's personally identifiable in the extreme. That's a big difference. I mean, if you go back to the days when we didn't have digital, we had magazines. Axiom had all kinds of data on you. They still have kinds of data on you. Tied to your name. Much of what we complain about online is anonymous, but this stuff is not.
And, oh, I should also mention, in case you guys were wondering, on the ISP side here is also the American Association of Advertising Agencies, the American Advertising Federation, the Data and Marketing Association.
Well, of course, they're the ones IAB. We're going to sell the information to.
So, this is terrible. Everyone should call their senator.
Yes.
And explain to them how this is not a good
saying. I don't work for a big company. I work for
it's
you.
It's stunning okay. that they would even. I mean, this is just we don't care about consumers at all. We are in the pockets of the people who pay for our campaigns. Period.
Well, and there's a lot of sensitive information that you have. I mean, in the past, so AT&T when it did its original plan, its gigabit plan for. That used your website surfing for giving you ads. They did it in a way that it protected like sensitive information, which is medical information and et cetera. But we don't necessarily have those guarantees. And
so here, watch this. This is some of this is probably over the top, but this is what the EFF says. Overturning these rules would allow an internet service provider to do. Sell your data to marketers. Okay, well, yeah, obviously. That's the number one thing. But it's not limited to that. They could also hijack your searches.
Well, they do that already with DNS redirects.
That's right. Put ads in your search results. Even if you're using Google, they could snoop through your traffic and insert ads. By the way, AT&T, Charter, and CMA have all done this.
They have.
They all have done this, and they were stopped. Remember Nebuad and Form? We talked about this a lot on Security Now a couple of years ago. Well, they had to stop, but they
actually had
start again.
Congressional hearings about this, and the people, the congressmen at the hearings, stunned me with their lack
ignorance.
Of knowledge about tracking. But
well, feigned or real. Feigned or real, by the way. It might be real because some of them are just ignorant. Some of them are being a little disingenuous.
Grandstanding. Yes. Yes, that is
true. Well, whatever do you mean? You're telling me that you could use these little bugs and tracking devices to follow whatever I'm doing on the internet? Whatever do you mean?
Wow, your Southern congressman impersonation is...
I say, son.
I say.
Like, speak into the microphone, sir.
Please stand down.
They could also pre-install software on your phone and record every URL you visit. Oh, no one would do that. No, just AT&T and Sprint and mobile, T-Mobile. Remember Carrier IQ? We talked about that on Security Now. An application that came pre-installed in phones sold by AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile. Logged all the sites and apps you use and sent it right back to your ISP, who now can use it for all sorts of things.
And to be clear, all of these companies have now installed deep packet inspection, which is what these services, the services that these guys were selling way back in 2008 and 2010. So all of the carriers have DPI on their networks already. They're just not using it for this. So this is not like a big investment. This is like just scraping money off the table. So deep packet inspection basically is a tool that lets you see like what types of traffic and where it's coming from. So that's
what the NSA does, right?
Well, it's in some ways it provides a service to the carrier. Like, you know that, oh my God, YouTube traffic is going through the roof. I need to allocate more bandwidth, not really bandwidth, but ports for those services. It helps you plan your network, but it also can tell you that I spend 15 hours a day on YouTube and, you know, see what websites I go to. So that's already in place. They don't need to buy new stuff necessarily to do this. This is easy to implement.
No, in fact, every one of these five things, they've done them in the past and they stopped because of blowback, but there ain't going to be no blowback anymore. Verizon used to put, remember those cookies you couldn't kill, you couldn't turn off.
Super cookies.
Super tracking headers into your day. Remember? And it didn't matter if you turned on Do Not Track. And the thing that our audience has told us time and time again, I've even had to fight with them because they're so adamant that we don't want this kind of snooping. And they blame Google and they blame Facebook. But this is going to happen at where you live. It's going to happen through your internet service provider. Far worse.
So if you have a VPN...
That's one solution, right? Is to stop. Don't trust your. The problem is, you know, there's overhead and it slows your traffic down a lot. But if you use a VPN, well, you're moving trust along down the pipe. You're no longer trusting your ISP. You're encrypting all your traffic from your computer. Of course, whoever's at the other end of that VPN, you have to trust them. You know, so your VPN provider now becomes your entry onto the internet instead of your ISP. This is so frustrating.
So that was my second story, and that was why I brought it up. Because I'm like, oh my Stacey. Gosh, guys, we can do something about this.
I blew it. Yeah, we have to do something now because we should have been beating this drum for at least a week. We've known about this going on. But now it's deadly earnest. Go to EFF.org and go to the Take Action page. Call your member of Congress. Call your senator or house member. Email not as good. Call's the best. Snail mail's good too. It's easy to call them and just register. The real thing is, in absence of hearing from us, they're going to go where the money is. But the money is only useful to them to buy votes. And if the voters rebel, and we've seen this happen before with internet regulation, if enough people contact them, they do pay attention. So contact them. It's not a done deal.
Used to in the old days. I don't know now. All the rules are off.
I know. We don't know what's going on.
Stop everything.
Yeah.
Guys, have you ever gotten a notification from your Google app about a new product being available based on your search history?
Oh, dear.
Because no, I just got one telling me. What? Did you get one?
No. What? What Google app? You mean what? Your Google Now cards? What?
Google Now cards just popped up to let me know, and they sent a notification, which they don't usually do, to tell me that Taylor Swift has a new album out.
Well, you do want to know that, right?
My daughter wants to know that.
Yeah.
But it's actually
well,
not
you think I would get that because I have bought that for my daughter.
I don't think, now, okay, this is kind of like the Beauty and the Beast, although less so. You've shown through signals that you're interested in Taylor Swift. This is doing you a service. If you really are interested, you would like to know she's got a new album going out, right?
Yeah.
That should be in your Google Now cards.
So it could be in my cards. I don't really want the notification.
Yeah.
that's an extra level
someone's
of
going
like,
to see it.
What are the rules about notifications from Google now?
I don't think they...
Can you turn those off?
Well, I don't want to turn all of them off because I love when it bings me and says, hey, leave now to get to your appointment.
Yeah.
That's really useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't ping me on like package notifications. It doesn't ping. There's a lot
like
of things
that,
it doesn't tell
me. You?
Nah. I get a lot of packages. It pings
you got, and that's
me,
what oh, you got the dog for anyway.
Right. It tells you when the weather's going to be different. But other than that, it usually doesn't notify me of things.
Hmm.
I don't know. Sorry.
I do hope Google's not going to get more aggressive on that.
That would be disappointing. Okay. Actually, this is less important than the
loss
of
privacy. It is less important. It is, but it's all of a piece, isn't it? It's how our stuff can start using us against ourselves or something.
Yes. Oh,
well,
here's
the problem I have. I believe that the future of media is about relationships and knowing people, and this is going to give it all cooties, and it's going to go too far, which is just what it's just happening, and then we'll never be allowed to know anything about anybody. You have in May 2016. The GDPR, I think it's called the General Data Privacy, General GD Privacy
Regulation. Is this the EU privacy something. Stuff?
The EU thing in May.
Oh my God, I just learned all about this. Yes, that is going
to
be so scary.
You have to opt into everything. You have to opt into breathing, everything.
And you know what's the scariest? This is going to be huge, you guys. The penalties are $20 million or 4% of your revenue for each indication. That's right. That's huge. And you know those test cases?
Oh. I think this is too far in the other direction, though. Like that stupid EU cookie thing, which now every site you go to, it says, we use cookies, you know. And it's like, that
like,
is so...
You say okay.
Yeah, and then you say okay. And it's like, how much money and time is wasted on that? I think this is the wrong...
Search for GDPR in Google. Just search for it and look at the number of paid ads that come up at the beginning for compliance.
Yeah, this is a big...
Boondoggle.
Companies are going to spend a lot of money on this. General Data Protection Regulation.
So to put that in perspective, because I think it's important to have a little perspective here, COPPA, which is our U.S. version for Children's Online Privacy and Protection Act, I think is the acronym.
I think that's right.
If you violate that, it's a $40,000 fine, up to a $40,000 fine per instance, compared to a $20 million fine per instance. So, and people...
And by the way, definition of personal data... name, photo, email address, bank details, posts on social networking websites. So your posts there.
So what
medical
do you think?
Information or a computer IP address.
So this is your kind IP. Of the opposite of what we're about to do in the United States.
Yes.
Which is better?
Well,
somewhere in the middle. And
a middle would be nice. The challenge is actually if an American goes to Europe, all of this matters if they're in the EU. They become presumably affected by this is how people are reading it. And if a European is over here, so it's not just I'm in Europe, I'm governed by this. It's I'm a European or I'm in Europe, I'm governed by this. So I was talking to someone who was concerned about like if I scan a European's badge at my trade show and I want to market to them, what does that mean for me? So,
Boy, it's really, what a contrast. Isn't between it? what the EU is doing and what we're doing, that's you couldn't have more polar opposites. I don't know. I feel like the EU is going too far.
Yes, I think
data subjects under the age of 16. This is like COPPA. Mm-hmm. Parental consent will be required to process the personal data of children under the age of 16 for online services. That means your IP address. I can't store your IP. I can't keep you
in state. I was wondering how does this removal of the FCC privacy rules kind of meld with COPPA? Because my child is on my internet network.
Oh, COPPA does not undermine COPPA. I mean, part of this is coming from the fact that Congress doesn't like the FCC getting involved in this kind of stuff. But Congress made the rules with COPPA. Congress is not saying we can't make the rules. Only the FCC can't make rules.
Right, but
so COPPA still applies.
If I'm an ISP, could you not make the argument that, you know, those internet searches were by my 10-year-old.
Yeah, how does the ISP know, right?
I mean, they could assume it's from a device, but, you know.
That's interesting. By the way, you would be bound by this, Stacy, if you're in the United States collecting information about an EU resident.
There you go.
You don't have to be in the EU or use equipment in the EU or anything.
All you have to do is offer services to anybody in the world is now subject to this.
Right.
Which is my lowest common denominator of freedom, highest common denominator of regulation problem. This opens the door for China saying, no. If anybody can see you, you're going to follow our rules too.
Well, this will give Trump, you know, much fodder if he looks into that.
He won't understand it. Man does not use a computer.
The cyber is out of his can.
Yeah, way out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to think that what the Senate is about to do tonight is as a result of a shift in the United States government toward corporate interests and away from individual interests.
Yes,
and that's definitely the result of the last election.
Yes, certainly.
Sorry, I've forgotten my decryption password. Nope, you're going to jail. You cannot claim that you forgot your passphrase. That would be the U.S. Third Circuit Court of Appeals.
I'm doomed.
Says,
oh God,
that's contempt of court.
That's going to go to that appeals court?
This is the appeals.
Supreme Court has to decide.
It's got to go to the Supremes. An ex-cop claimed he couldn't remember the password to decrypt his hard drive.
Which they believe has child porn.
Right.
On it.
A lower court said, nope, contempt of court. Third Circuit today upheld. Actually, 2 days ago, upheld. So, by the way, in doing so, avoided addressing the lower court's rejection of the defendant's argument that being forced to reveal his password violated his Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination. So they didn't specifically address that. They just said it's willfully disobeying and resisting the order to decrypt the hard drive on his Mac Pro is contempt and he can be held in contempt.
Now, this is a cop. I wonder, how far? Ex-cop. Okay, right. From a journalistic, if shield laws come into play.
They have evidence of stuff that had the hash passing through the computer. Yeah.
Forensic examination of the computer indicated the device had been used to visit known child exploitation sites and to download thousands of files with the same hash values as known child porn files. The files were not present on the computer. They are assumed to be stored on external encrypted hard drives. I would like to leave the child porn out of this because that really colors the whole thing because nobody, we all acknowledge it's a horrendous crime. Nobody's for that. On the other hand, we would like the court. Well, I don't know what we want the court to do in this case.
What do you think?
Yeah. The John Doe, we'll call him, said he could not remember the passwords necessary to decrypt the drives and entered several incorrect passwords during the forensic examination. Really, the issue was the judge didn't believe him.
Well,
the judge found that Doe remembered the passwords needed to decrypt the hard drive, but chose not to reveal them because of what was on there. In other words, the Fifth Amendment defense wasn't even addressed or acknowledged. No, you have no Fifth Amendment protection to reveal the password on revealing the passwords. That's also a big deal.
Because
we've always held that a password was protected by the right against testimony against yourself. It was believed that giving a password would be like testifying against yourself as opposed to giving a fingerprint, which would not. Senior staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation says anytime suspects are forced to disclose the contents of their mind, that's enough to trigger the Fifth Amendment. End of story. And in fact, the EFF filed an amicus brief with that point of view. However.
So with a Chromebook, how would you encrypt a thumb drive? Since you're not running a program.
Wow.
which you normally need, right, to encrypt?
Yeah, I don't think, unless there's a de-encrypt. Oh, I know. There is a plugin you could use. You couldn't encrypt the whole drive, but you can encrypt files using MiniLock. I think there's a Chrome extension for MiniLock,
uh-huh.
which is a very nice thing to know about.
You can encrypt folders?
Files. I don't think you can do folders.
It goes back to our earlier conversation about crossing borders.
Right. MiniLock is awesome. Yeah, it's available in the Chrome Web Store. So this is a Chrome plugin you can use. It uses a password and your email and hashes them together. And you can share those, and they're unencryptable. It also is it's a public key crypto. So I have given out, for instance, my MiniLock hash, my MiniLock key. And if anybody wanted to send me something encrypted, they could
I see.
Use my MiniLock key to send me something encrypted, and only I could decrypt it. MiniLock.io, free open source. Highly recommended. I don't know. I wonder. Chrome extension for full disk crypto. I don't think so. That doesn't sound like something you could do. But you certainly could do individual files anyway. See, we're already thinking about that.
Exactly.
We're only thinking about that. But this court decision said, you know, you'd be in trouble because we know you know the password.
I think that's assuming a lot, but
I can prove I can take you to 30 places I can't get into anymore.
Oh, you're old. Well, oh, you did forget. Yeah.
Well, and unlike a web service, a drive, you can't just email someone to get your password.
Right. Right. Nope. Don't know it. I don't know it. I think it's so weird. That's a big judgment call on the part of the court that, well, you really do. You know it. You're just pretending you don't know it.
Well, it's. I mean, I've definitely had arguments like that with my kid, where I'm like, you know, who did this?
Right.
Or
nobody.
Did you do this?
No. Nope.
I don't remember.
Nope. Didn't.
Really?
I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I don't remember. I wasn't there at the time. I've never met that woman. All right. Let's wrap up so we can get out of Dodge here. I'm just looking to see if there's anything else we want to cover.
Medium. So this is something you might want to know about.
Okay.
So I don't think I've announced it yet, but I got an invitation to become a Medium partner.
Oh, Ev Williams has turned away advertising and is looking for new ways to monetize Medium. Is this part of that?
So you can join as a paid member.
Paid member.
And then as a writer, I can join. And then here's the part that I'm not sure I like. It says that people can always post for free on Medium. Definition of always these days, who knows. But then I can basically apply to have my stuff added into some evidently premium pool.
Oh.
But, you know, I don't like editors. I don't want editors.
I love editors.
Editors make me unhappy.
So is that a requirement?
What I want to say.
Of being in the premium pool, you have to have an editor?
I don't know if they edit you or not, but they pick. So you kind of offer your stuff.
So you'll give them your $5 a month, but they don't guarantee you'll be in there?
Well, there's two different things. I can belong as a reader at $5 a month, but I can belong as a writer, and I'll get a piece of that based on, I guess, usage. I thought it was going to be, you know, somebody said, we talked about this show when this all started coming down. Somebody said that Medium should just buy Patreon and let you support the writers you like.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to create basically some kind of, as I read this, as I understand this, they're going to create some kind of compilation.
Interesting.
So I don't know whether
you're not going to do it. Like this. I don't understand. Really.
I do everything.
I mean, Medium, besides giving you a nice, clean interface, it's really about a community, right? It's kind of
exactly like that's the value I get from it,
right?
Yeah, I might as well just put it back on, you know, Buzz Machine.
$5 a month's not that much,
but here's the problem. Here's the problem. There's no shortage of content, community. People.
Right.
Right. I mean, here I talked earlier about the need for a quality network, and that's fine. But on the other hand, there's no shortage. no shortage.
Well, we've been having Jason Calacanis and Marco Arment and I have been having a Twitter conversation today. Jason said something interesting. He said, you know, somebody should do a Netflix-style play with podcast content, create a Netflix, you know, a $5 a month service that you subscribe to for premium content from audio content from podcasters as a way to kind of create a new model for podcasters. And so it's kind of be kind of like Medium, wouldn't it? Except instead of written word, it's audio.
Does 60 dB kind of count for something like that?
Yeah, but you don't
like
have to pay to be on 60 dB. You just have to be lucky enough for them to pick you. But they could do it that way. I guess they could do that. I think they're thinking about that, among other monetization strategies. I like the idea of being free.
Well, and you can, I mean, with voice, it becomes really easy to kind of curate something that you like, like your podcast that you like. So I don't know.
I rarely go to the front page of Medium though, Jeff.
Yeah.
So you don't really, I don't think you get much of an advantage being on Medium.
Wait, no. Oh, well, so I've been on the front page of Medium I've been an editor's pick. One of my stories.
Did it go through the roof?
Yes. It got like 250,000 or 300,000 views, which
Jesus.
It certainly gives you a jump start. Probably what happened is that you got more viral because you were in a staff pick. And then, that gave you a little jump start, but that was enough to kind of stimulate the rest of it, which still comes, all my content comes from links on Twitter, on Facebook, Tech Meme. Congratulations to Gabe Rivera on that nice article about Tech Meme. I only see stuff that other people link to. Nuzzle. Nuzzle's really great because that's links that come from my Twitter, people I follow on Twitter. So it's a great newspaper of, because I follow the right people, the people I'm interested in on Twitter. It's a great newspaper material. They have a good algorithm. And then a lot of times I do get to Medium from that. I get there from Reddit, the front page of Reddit. I get there from Y Combinator's News. Those are the beats checks I do. I often think I should go to the front page of Medium more often. There's some good stuff on here.
How many places do you need?
The email. I'm the wrong person on that. But everybody says, email is the way to get a hold of, to reach people.
Same here.
But I hate email. I get too much of it. I never look at my email.
I don't either.
It's no way.
Never. Newsletters, I just don't do it. Newsletters are going to take over the world, not for me.
I have a filter. My email filter says if there's unsubscribe, the word unsubscribe is in the bottom of any email, put it in this folder, which I never look at.
Wait, are you saying you're not subscribed to my newsletter, you guys?
I am, but it's in the folder.
Oh! Useless to me, Leo. Useless.
You are dead to me.
But we're unusual, I think, right? Because everybody says, you want to reach people. Email is the best system for reaching people, blah, blah, blah. And you would vouch for that, right, Stacey?
Well, it's the best way to reach a certain type of audience. So, like, I cover something pretty niche. I've got a dedicated group of people who are like, I really care about the Internet of Things. And so I think it's valuable to them because they don't have to – I bring them all the stuff, right, as opposed to having them go out and find it. So I think for some people – but if you're like a general interest person and you subscribe to my newsletter, you're probably going to open it and be like, oh, my God, what the heck? This is too much IoT.
So, I just get so many newsletters that I just put them in a folder and I never read them. I do the beat checks, you know? I mean, I'm doing the beat checks. I go to Tech Meme and all those sources and my Feedly RSS reader and all that stuff. That's how I find news, Hacker News. And I find that much more useful than going. So I'm interested in IoT, but I'd rather just, you know what? You know why this works? Because it's Hacker News and Tech Meme, they're curated.
Mm-hmm.
Nuzzle, they're curated. Somebody else, they're collating signals from a bunch of people. Whether it's Hacker News, so it's people I know who are interested in stuff I am, or
that's what a newsletter is.
Yeah, but it's only curated by one person.
Okay, that's fair. I'm like,
this is curated by this is the wisdom of the crowd.
Got it. The crowd.
But you're right. You know, that's why I subscribe to your newsletter and Kevin Rose's And I subscribe to a bunch of really good newsletters. I just, for some reason, I never get around to reading them.
It's okay. I'm not. Sorry. I'm going to go over there and cry.
I'm so sorry. I really should come up with a new strategy. What?
Nick Denton just tweeted 2 minutes ago. He's finally out of bankruptcy. My decade-long involvement with Peter Thiel is over. I don't know what the rest is. So other journalists can pick up that particular chalice.
How did he get out of... by the way, he's going to Brazil now. How did he out of bankruptcy so fast?
Oh, it's not so fast.
Wait a minute. I'm looking at the old Nick
because
Denton.
When they sold Gawker, he had resources that he had to settle everything and agree.
But they figured out a way to do that.
If he kept his apartment or not.
Yeah. Oh, so I must be, because this is a Nick Denton Twitter thing, but he hasn't tweeted since 2007. So this is his first Twitter account. He's only got 13.
It's Nick not Ned.
Denton, Nick, what? Denton.ned?
Nick not Ned.
Nick not yeah. Ned.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, congratulations.
Posted to Zurich. Yes.
Congratulations. He's finally out of bankruptcy. Wow. My decade-long involvement with Peter Thiel is over. He's not holding any grudges. a couple of quickies before we wrap up. Kurt Eichenwald's harasser has been arrested. Kurt, a columnist for Vanity Fair. He's also epileptic. He has been sent tweets in the past with epigenetic images designed to send him into a seizure. They caught a guy who allegedly intentionally sent him a GIF designed to provoke a seizure. And the way they caught him was kind of interesting, too.
Oh, that was interesting.
After they caught him, they read his direct messages in which he messaged other people, I hope this sends him into a seizure. Let's see if he dies. So that, you know, they got the smoking gun in terms of intent. The way they got him, the alleged tweeter was using a burner phone. Actually, no, he was not using it, but he was using a SIM, a burner SIM that he got, which was not associated in any way with his name, but he put it in his iPhone 6. And so the FBI got a warrant for Twitter and got the SIM information, and then which gave them the phone number. And then they went to AT&T, or no, they went to Apple. Went to Apple with a phone number and said, is this associated with any iCloud accounts? And Apple said, oh, yes, it definitely is. Here's the guy. So even though he had an anonymous SIM, because he used it in an iPhone and it got attached to his iCloud account, they got him. So just a tip, if you want to harass somebody, don't do that. Anyway, I think this is great because the more we can do to get rid of these harassers, the better. This guy was not
a crime that just occurred, Leo, was that you called it a GIF. That's a crime.
It's a GIF?
It's a GIF. I know that the founder of GIFs says GIF, I don't care. He's
I can't
wrong.
Remember, so I just usually I say GIF or GIF. I do both because I can't remember what the right answer is.
But I do think it's a punchline, too, that a GIF is a deadly weapon.
Yeah, no kidding.
Here's my question, because it's a DOJ one, and then there's a grand jury indictment, but grand juries are famous for indicting anything. Yeah. So Yeah. How serious is this?
Well, it's cyber stalking. That's a serious crime. You can go to jail.
The crime. Yes. How legit is this to point to this as any sort of precedent setting? Sorry.
Oh, he was in the hospital. There's clear damage. Clear intent.
Is it going to help Brianna Wu is the question. Is it going to help somebody who's merely harassed as opposed to sent to the hospital? Is that what you're asking?
I'm trying to understand, how far do you have to go and what other mediums could you pursue someone, you know, and cause harm to them? Right. Because you can think about and this is Stacey and her IoT stuff, but I could ask... you know, a device to, I could put responsibilities on a certain device and I don't know, my Hue lights, they actually can go into strobe mode. So if you send my Hue lights into strobe mode, what does that mean? I don't know.
That's criminal, and you would go to jail if you got caught.
So
we got to wrap it up. It's almost four. Neiman Lab says people trust news stories not based on who published it. They don't look at that. They look at who shared it. So if the person who shared a story is credible, the story is deemed credible, even if it came from a completely nonsensical site. People are heavily influenced by the identity of the sharer. Just a little little tidbit.
True. That's why Nuzzle's so popular.
Yes, because it's, yes, I agree. It's kind of, it's vetted. That's why I like that crowds thing, right?
Yay, crowds.
Yay, crowds. But I will read your newsletter, I promise. What is the, where? How do I get that newsletter? Stacey on IoT?
So he can
IoT?
Search it from his
IoT podcast?
Stacey. Yeah, go to stacyoniot.com and you can sign up.
Too bad it's not stacyisonit.com. That would be good.
Or you can do that. No.
IoT, Stacy's on it. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If it's time to buy a new house or time to refi, and this might be a good time to refi, interest rates are going up. You got to get a mortgage lender you trust. Nobody better than Quicken Loans. Just look at all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards year after year for the best, the number one in customer satisfaction. But more than that, go to one that's convenient for you. And that's what I love about Quicken Loans' newest Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online mortgage approval process that doesn't take weeks or months or days. Last time I bought a house took 4 weeks, a month to get approved for the loan. Rocket Mortgage approves you in minutes. For a loan that's tailored to you, you even can adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time, submit all the paperwork online, including bank statements and pay stubs, all that stuff, and you'll get approved, literally approved in minutes for a loan that's right for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online with one of the best in the business, quickenloans.com/twig. quickenloans.com/twig. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That's Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/twig. I'm just signing up right now for my new weekly IoT newsletter from Stacy on IoT. Let's just press that subscribe button. There you go. And I love it. You opt in. I think that's the best. Now I'll be up to date on all of this stuff. Thank you, Stacy. You got a pick for us?
I do. I have, and sadly the link is not linking. I can't share my if this then account, if this then that applets anymore.
Yeah, I know.
So this is good, and it's Google specific too. Ooh. So this is my really specific if this then that applet. So my challenge is every night before I go to bed, I turn my phone into do not disturb mode because I love my sleep.
Yes.
And I hate notifications about new albums in the middle of the
night. I don't want to hear.
So what I did is I tied it to my Fitbit. And what happens, so you activate your Fitbit, and I believe you can do this with other fitness trackers that are also on if this and that. They don't have a I'm sleeping mode now. So I have to manually turn it off at night. But in the morning, I always forgot to turn it back on. So I'd be like at 2 o'clock, I'd be like, you have 30 missed calls because I never turned my phone ringer back on, basically. So I set it up. So once my Fitbit has logged my sleep for the night, it turns the ringer on my phone up to 70% in my case, but you can turn it all the way up if you want. If you're running Android 7.0, it will take your phone up from do not disturb mode. If you're running anything earlier than that, you shouldn't be. Also, it won't work. So this is for people with Android phones and a Fitbit, but you can also do it with other sleep tracking things. And it's not immediate. It takes a few minutes, but it is like, help me all this week. Make sure I answer my, or make sure I get my phone calls and texts. So, yay.
So I'm in my Fitbit and I say, as soon as I record my Fitbit sleep, turn notification back on.
Turn ringer volume to
high or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Whatever you want.
All right.
So I like it because I literally never remember to set this up. So
nice to know. I have it just on a schedule so that it's automatic. At 7, see, at 8 p.m. it turns off, and at 8 a.m. it turns on or whatever, you know.
I don't wake up on a set time, especially on the weekends.
Right.
So I'm kind of like,
not till I say so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. But there's no way we can share recipes anymore on If This and That.
I don't see one. That's kind of sad.
Sad.
And why is that?
They changed their whole platform last month.
They're changing. Yeah, they're changing a lot of things.
Yeah.
So,
Jeff, do you have a number?
Oh, it's a minor one. I don't know if you ever had the misfortune of following the formerly famous Piers Morgan on Twitter.
Yeah, whatever happened to Piers Morgan? What a jerk.
He's a pain in the rear. Now, politically, he's awful in my view, and he goes on and on about football. And
weird, he also gets in fight with people I like.
He gets into lots of fights. He gets into a fight with Lord Alan Sugar, who is the host of the British version of Shark Tank. And they go on and on and on for it. So Sugar just spent $5,000 for comic relief to shut up Piers Morgan for a day.
And calls it the bargain of the century.
Yes.
You mean he can't tweet for a day?
For a day.
And then £5,000 to a charity, probably?
£5,000, yeah.
That's pretty funny. It's for comic relief.
Yeah.
Shut up, Piers. 51. Oh, that's very good. I like it. And it was a mere £5,000.
Would you shut up if you could?
I sometimes go whole days without tweeting.
I would shut up totally to give money to my favorite charities.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, so would I.
What's wrong with that? All right. In the interest of getting out of here, we'll skip my pick this week and I'll give you two next week. But we got to get going for TNT. I'm always late and I hate doing that to them. But everybody must go to StacyOnIoT.com and sign up for that newsletter, listen to the podcast, celebrate by singing I've Been Working on the Railroad sometime today.
Thank you.
Stacy Higginbotham, thanks so much for joining us. Great to hear from you. We actually ordered the Lutron Cassetta, and Megan's going to do a review in her new house of that.
Ooh, nice. Oh, yeah. Somebody asked me why I told you to do that instead of Z-Wave things.
Yeah.
I was like, and it's because Lutron is more reliable, and because the Z-Wave, they're just eh. And because you already have smart things, that's what they were.
Yep.
That's why they wanted to know. But good. Lutron has the smart things integration, and now it's really good. So that's it.
And it works with my Echo, which was like the number one reason I want to do it, because I can talk my lights to sleep, right? Actually, you should have a way to tell your... I bet you. Let's find a way that Stacy can wake up and say, turn my phone on to her Echo.
I could do it with my Google Assistant, I bet. My Google Home.
I bet.
Okay. I'll work on it.
Or you could... Now, how do you... When you record your sleep, what do you record? You just say, I'm awake?
No, it just automatically starts recording whenever it thinks I'm asleep.
Because you moved.
Yeah. I don't care if it's like super accurate.
Right.
This is accurate enough.
Okay. I feel, you know, I've been using Zapier as well. I feel like by the way, Zapier, I love it, has just offered to pay its employees $10,000 if they don't live in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I want to go work for Zapier now.
I know. They're based in San Francisco. It's kind of very confusing.
They just produced a book on remote working.
Yeah.
It's actually really got a lot of good things for both managers and the workers.
So Zapier is really trying to promote this idea. Don't live in the expensive San Francisco area. We'll give you money. To move somewhere else. Nice. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at CUNY. If you're a lucky student, you get to study with the king. You can read his writings on Medium and at buzzmachine.com. And, of course, his great books include Google, What Would Google Do?, Private Parts, Geeks Bearing Gifts, Public Parts, not private. That's that other guy. The other guy.
Close enough.
Public Parts. What would Google do? Public Parts, Geeks Bearing Gifts. And Gutenberg the Geek. Thank you for being here, both of you. Makes it so much more fun.
Always a pleasure.
Love doing this show with you guys. We do it every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Yes, that's a new time because we're in summertime now. 20:30 UTC. Please stop by and say hi. Our chat room is irc.twit.tv. And the live stream is available at youtube.com/twit and ustream.com/twit and twitch.tv/twit. Or just come to our website. twit.tv/live, and you can watch live. If not, on demand everywhere. Go to twit.tv/twig
or wherever your podcasts aggregate. Gather in a gaggle. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week on Twig.